Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, guys, fun Lulz episode on tap today. We have shadowy DFS grinder Utikau joining us. He's going to talk to us what he's been up to, why he's maybe rolling back some of his play these days, and everything else he thinks about the current DFS ecosystem. It's Lulz with Brian and Pete. Let's go.
He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What? Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in 1 for yes, 2 for no. Let the DFS gods pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
All right, Brian, it's finally nice to get a DFS player back on this show who's actually won a Millie Maker. You know, we had been breaking our own rules there for a while.
It's true. The quality of player we've had on lately is gone way down, Pete. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah,
it's good to have you on. We've been trying to get you on for a while, actually. So it's good that his schedule opened up and he popped on with us.
Just so I know here for the conversation, do you want me to refer to you as Yuta? Do you want the full Yuta Cow? Do you want to give me your government
name? You can go Yuta.
What's the best way to do it?
You can go Yuta. That is a government name.
Is it? Okay. Awesome. Yeah. There you go. Well, we have Yuta joining us. I want to say this is maybe your just second kind of bigger public appearance. You did the podcast with Levitan on ETR in the spring. Is that true? Have you done any other media since then?
Not in particular. It's kind of in line with wanting to pivot away from DFS, just see what's out there. Just from that pod, even I've been getting like random connections, and it's like been useful to even cite off it. So, just sort of like seeing what's out there and, it doesn't really matter for me to talk on DFS to any big extent.
Well, you're going to probably get a whole bunch of invites after this one, so be prepared.
I don't know if that's a good thing. But
I don't know. We had – it's been a conversation topic in DFS, and I don't know if you were following kind of even in the past couple of weeks with, you know, when Osimo was out here and made what I thought was a joke about Nerdy Tenor ruining DFS by sharing his process on some of these podcasts. Has that been a consideration for you up until now of like, hey, why would I go share what I do publicly?
Not particularly for me, because my process is super no frills and might as well be just work hard. As far as like how I approach it, there's no software or like sims or really stuff like that. I'll use the optimizer. But it's a lot of just like macro thinking and then grind it down to like the play level. So it's just a lot of legwork. And for me, like being a decade in, I've been able to just repeat the process so many times that it almost seems as if like I have the sim in my head. So I never really had to branch out in that direction because it just feels as though my tendencies of like trying to beat the game over time and like seeing it change, it like evolved my own play style in a way that where it was like I was always studying how people would play and I was recognizing how the metas over time were shifting. So for me, it was never really like there was no real process shift. It was just a slow shift and like evolution of myself and the play style came with it.
Do you make your own projections? Do you aggregate? Do you aggregate and then mess with those projections?
I project everyone manually, every slate, even like the baseball and NBA. So it was just like in the past, that process might have taken 2 hours, and now it might not even take 1 hour. But it's still not, still like a lot more like work than hitting a button on a sim and like sifting through those, because I feel like in that situation, it might take you an hour to do the whole thing. So I would take an hour just to project, and then however remaining time I have left, I'll be building.
I know you, well, I'm guessing, because we've talked offline and you sent me some screenshots that you use FanGraphs then for baseball, it looked like.
Yeah.
Who doesn't? So you're bottom up. You're making your own projections. Have you ever like compared them to the content site and seen if you're more accurate or anything like that?
Yeah, I aggregate from those, but then that actually allows me to see where I'm being different. And if it's like a source of fragility where I just think they're wrong, it actually is a signal to lean into my own stuff heavier. If that makes sense, because it's not really about what you know necessarily. Like, yes, projections are the most important thing that is going out. But it's more important. It's kind of matters twofold if you know something that others don't. So I'll like at some point artificially boost factors that I know are correct directionally. But even I'll like double count on purpose if I know other people aren't on something, basically.
And have you noticed that kind of edge of you being, you know, organically contrarian by generating your own projections? Have you noticed projections getting sharper and diminishing that over the years?
I haven't noticed projections getting sharper really in any form, but you could argue that more people are using projections in the current ecosystem. So that alone would be an argument to get away from projections, at least as they are. Like I'm sure most people do some tweaks, but I don't think projection systems get sharper, nor do I think projection sources are even trying to get sharper.
Interesting.
Why do you think they're not trying to?
Well, they're also run by players too.
Mm-hmm.
So if no one's going to question the projection they're putting out, why would you put out your best? I'm not saying people are doing that, but like, There's no reason to like give out the best projections per se from their standpoint.
I mean, there is some more dynamics going on there. Like the owners of some of these sites barely play anymore, and they're more interested.
Right, but there's also little accountability on their end. So, like there's very little accountability. If they didn't necessarily, if they knowingly gave like 95% of what their best is, it would never get back to them, and it wouldn't even matter.
So you're of the belief that some sites are intentionally not giving their best possible projections to their subs?
I'm sure it happens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's got to be in the range of outcomes, right? Like, I mean, I know, like,
it's like, yeah.
I mean, I know some of the guys at Stochastic, they don't use their projections because they're not on, like, that projections team. I don't know all the inner workings of all the sites, obviously, but I do know a lot of the guys. So, like, I know for sure some of the guys, like, you know, Josh Engelman, just for example, he uses his own stuff. Like, you could tell from looking at post content. I mean, I'm guessing. I know Steve Buzzard, too, the Colts, he does his own stuff. And I think Sean runs most of their projections now. Sean's on. So, yeah, I mean, you're not getting, like, I imagine the entire team's not working on the projections all day and arguing over, is the guy going to get 27 minutes or 21 minutes? And, I imagine.
Yeah, you're not getting, like, an aggregate sharp group thing of projections. You're getting, like, two guys' projections with a team behind them, but they're approving it. So it's not really, like, a very thorough approach from the whole site, especially when there's a time sensitive factor to it and they're all playing, which is why it's very hard to manage. I'd be inclined to think the ones where like the guys making it aren't playing are going to be a little more reliable, because it's just the sole focus.
That's an interesting dichotomy because people, Adam in the chat, mentioning the skin in the game thing and wanting the touts and the people doing that to have skin in the game to make them better. But you're actually saying just the time element might actually make it less of a factor if they're not giving everything to the projections.
It's probably NBA specific, but yeah, I mean, it'd be impossible to put out your best projection if you are playing at a high level. Like if hypothetically I started outside, I couldn't really do that at a high level. It would be one or the other. But they do have that. They have the guy running the projection, and then they have the touts who are playing. So it's not exclusive.
I think also like ETR is kind of a different dynamic too, a little bit. Most of those guys were content guys more than professional DFS players. Like the most of the team, right, Pete? Maybe I'm wrong.
Wiggins I considered way more on the playing side than content.
Sure, Wiggins, Dink maybe?
If you watch the ETR like NBA stuff, whoever does the shows, I think Dink's on there sometimes. At like, if they ever go long and it's like 6 o'clock or something, he'll be like, oh, I gotta run, because it's like, it's getting too close to lock. And he has to, it's kind of his responsibility to manage and like oversee the projections, but he's also playing. So I think that's even indicative of like it being a tough balance. And he's not playing like super high stakes, but just if he wasn't doing the projections, he could probably like fiddle with it more.
But you could also like just screw the customer, get the projections, do your stuff, and then release it with 5 minutes left, even though you were done 10 minutes ago or something, you know, like.
Well, I was arguing that if you were to do that, no one would come. It wouldn't come back to you.
Yeah.
But like.
I'm not
even pointing fingers. It's just like.
Yeah.
It's a occupational hazard.
I think it's an important idea too. Not many people are talking about it. I do think there's still like ETR's brand is they want to be the sharpest numbers out there. And so it is an incentive for them to like oversee who's ever doing this and get rid of somebody who would possibly not be putting their full faith and effort into it. So there are other incentive and consequences for this, but I mean, do you think if you did it, let's say you ran one of these sites, NBA product, like how much difference would the projections be? You know,
I just wouldn't do both. I just wouldn't be responsible for both gameplay and putting out timely projections.
But then like how more accurate would your projections be? Like what would
I mean, I would personally use the same just because it takes work to create shittier projections. So like, I'm not going to it's just a different entire process.
I was trying to like more like say like how
I guess I'm assuming most base projections are algo driven, but there's a lot of feel based stuff and like the art side of it that goes into it, where that would be the side that I wouldn't release. Because you can easily do algo driven stuff, but there's specific like game knowledge things that you can put out where algos probably wouldn't even factor and they might not agree with.
Could you give an
example? That's the part that you don't want to get.
Can you give an example?
Just like bullshit narrative type stuff, or like coach tendencies to go small, some shit like that, where like it's situational. Like lumbering big versus up and down 3-point shooting team, you can't rely on. You kind of hope that guy played Jokic and Embiid a couple days before, because that's a very specific matchup driven thing. You're going from having to guard a big boy to now probably having to guard like a small ball four or something. If people use that assumption that like the Zubac play is going to like play the same versus Embiid against like the Warriors or something the next day, it's pretty erroneous assumption.
It sounds like, you know, we had a former pro player Chess Is Okay on a long time ago, and he said that he spent 80 hours a week kind of researching, building, and a lot of people kind of scoffed at that, rolled their eyes. Talking to you, it does sound like you are more of a roll up your sleeves and put in the time kind of guy. Like, how many hours on a regular week are you investing into your entire DFS process?
I kind of touched on it earlier. It was a lot more before, not so much now because it's been internalized. So maybe at one point I was 80 hours. Now it's probably like, I mean, I still game watch. So if you count those, it's still plenty of hours. But in terms of raw manpower, like, you don't have to necessarily game watch. It's a lot less. It doesn't need to be 40.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever hire anyone to like code out something to help your process to speed up that time during the week?
Only for specific like independent research projects where I thought it could be like a split or like a difference making thing, but never in like really to structure my play or like help me on a day to day.
How about partners? Ever any partners?
No,
smart man. So, okay.
Projections. Yeah, we know where that goes.
Projections, and then we're going projections right into the optimizer.
Yeah, I mean, shitload of rules.
Shitload of rules, even boost, NBA.
Correlation type stuff, but that's off the dome. That's not even, like, I guess it's like, you've been like, you guys have been like on the sim conversation a lot, right? I think what the sims actually do is just like boil down that aspect of like ownership, correlations, maybe some game theory, construction into like its own factor. Like it's simplifying that aspect, but like if you're spending all this time and thinking about that anyway, you don't really need to go in that direction. And that's sort of, those are like the skills that I've like honed in over time. So this is why personally I've never used a sim, but if you were to ask me if I think a sim would make me a better player, I'd say yeah.
Okay. That was always my intuition. Rules. So NBA, are you doing like, you know, no bigs from the same, no center from the same team, just right off the top of your head? Or are you just popping in a bunch of guys you don't want the same? What else is there?
That's like a slate. That's all like a slate by slate basis. If you're going to have like 2-3K centers on the same team and like the starting center is like some massive force who's going to like, where there's going to be like trickle down stuff. It doesn't really matter if the second guy is going to get 18 minutes in their mid price. So you couldn't just exclude those, mm-hmm. But it's like case by case. Maybe like if it was like players of like clashing styles, like how I mentioned, like playing big or playing small, a lot of matchups, it has to go one way or the other. So like maybe you can exclude people who are like negative correlated in that aspect.
So you said you did some like independent research on specific projects or thinking if there was a hidden edge, but you're not using sims. So is the idea like you want to find these more macro trends or undiscovered edges and then apply them individually yourself on a slate by slate basis, but knowing that the sauce has already been researched with models? Is that a fair characterization?
The projects I'm thinking of are basically just splits where I have a hypothesis of something and I want to see if it's true, but it's something, things that just aren't spoken about.
Mm-hmm. So where on that spectrum, you know, our guy Travis Petty has been joking brains over ball. You still seem very projections focused, numbers focused, but there has to be an element of knowing ball, of kind of the art more than science here. That's a huge part of your process.
I think the knowing ball is the projection,
okay.
Right? It factors into the projections a lot, especially when you're going into matchup type stuff, right? Like it doesn't matter as much in baseball where it's one percentage versus another percentage. There's still like matchup driven stuff, but it doesn't matter as much as when it's 11 guys interacting with 11 guys or five with five.
I'm still thinking about the rules. I haven't been using that in a while.
you like basically, well, like if you have a sim and you're correlating your plays, that's kind of what the rules are. to one extent.
Well, that's right? Where a sim is better, though, you know,
because stacking is a rule.
Right. But a sim, like for the bit, like the two bigs at 3K or something, you know, an optimizer, it's an either or option. So you can either say, don't play them, or I'm not going to make this rule. Where a sim, you know, you could compare and go, oh, actually, I probably shouldn't play them, even though they're both 3K today.
There's the sample sizes on those situations in the sim are going to be very small because the rosters change, personnel will change, and you might have a sample of like one or zero of that specific guy being out in that specific matchup. So it's useless really to rely on sim-driven historicals for those.
I guess that's fair. Yeah, if the projection, if the sim play-by-play guesses are really garbage, then yeah, it's not going to tell you much. I don't know. I think I'd give it more credit than that. And you're also comparing against other options, which is part of it. And at least you're attempting a guess in an educated way compared to an optimizer, which is just yes or no. So I don't know. I think that, but either way, I don't care. Like I'm not a sim bro.
I like the Sims. I think they're cool. I don't really care for using them myself, and I don't think it's like the end of DFS either, because I'm sure the best sim guys have already been simming for years. Right. And so it's kind of just a buzzword, and, accurate projections are still going to be like 5-10 times more important than having access to like contest sims. They're a multiplier, and they're not a large one. They're a multiplier. They're like a 1.01 multiplier on you.
Yeah. I mean,
even worse. Yeah. I guess it could fool like a losing player into thinking they are having a perceived edge. Right. Like if you, I really believe that you already have to be fairly sharp to use the sim as well. So hypothetically, if I were to use it, it would be almost like out of saving time more than thinking it would be making me better. Personally, I think because it's like I said, it's boiling down a bunch of like of these like factors that have nothing to do with the projections, like the field stuff. I would rather not have an algo that I didn't create personally tell me how to weight those things.
Yeah.
And it's also like there might be 100 people using that algo. So like we can operate on the assumption right now that say like having access to like one of the top sim products, I don't know what they are. Let's say that puts you plus EV right now. Just plugging in ETR projection into ETR sim or stochastic projection into stochastic sims, you are now plus EV just if you like put in some simple parameters and run those lineups. If that's the case, those users would be like the new wave. And that might have already happened already, by the way. Like the guys who have been simming for years might have already like tapped into that. And the sims now might actually be late. We don't know. I think if we got to the scenario where like that's the new meta, it's gonna saturate to the point where the industry is going to consolidate on a few sims. And in that case, it also probably consolidates on a few projection sources. And then if you consider it like that way, the like sim approved lineups would be overused. If the sims are good, this would be like, it could be right now. It could be like a year or two from now. But you'll have like this over sim meta where like we would need to come and get like a bigger brain to like create a sim beating sim. You know what I mean? Like, so if you're going to sim, you should do it now because there's going to be diminishing like sim returns.
I mean, theoretically though, in that scenario, the people making the fields should recognize that the sims are oversampled now, and then they would adjust the ownership in the field and then it would change again. So it'd be whatever comes up with a better field first.
Sure. But then that would just be marginal.
Like making a field is an art as well. Making a field is really tough. And so like the better the person is at that, the more, because just think about it, Yuta, if you had the CSV already, you knew what everyone's going to play, even after late swap, this would help you immensely. So the closer go ahead.
Yeah. Your typical user is just going to use the field that is provided. So it doesn't really change that. If the sim is the thing that got them over the edge from minus EV to plus EV, that player is going to succeed. And then at some point, it'll be over-simmed.
Sure. Well, I don't care about sims anyways, Pete. I'm over sims.
Yeah,
but
you're out here ordering protein powder on Amazon and
protein. That's an alpha brain, buddy. You know, you need the biggest brain out there. Well, so we make lineups. We in the optimizer. We're beyond that. We make some rules. Do you then export that and sift through a bunch of lineups through some sort of process, looking for combos? Do you have a portfolio theory in mind? What do you do then?
If it's a Sunday, I have to like approve everything. So it's essentially hand building. Like they're generating, but I'm manually making the edits. So like I'll use what my rules and parameters give me, but it's still vetting from there. And Sunday is the only time you have all the time available to do it with the news cycles. Is that what you're getting at?
Kind of like, I mean, you could either like an NBA, sometimes you have no time. And you just make 150 or whatever, and just pop them in as quick as you can into your CSV. And you play a huge amount of volume, and that could get really tricky in itself too.
Yeah.
And then also you could also make like an MLB. You usually have a lot more time. You can make 1,000 lineups, and then select from that cohort of lineups in a bunch of different ways. And some lineups are worked better together or worse together. And so the I don't know. I'm just interested in if you're doing anything like that.
It depends on the field size and who's in it. It's very subjective to like how top heavy it is, for example, how big it is. NBA, you're like more focused about weighing probability of news and implications of that. So I don't really like sift and like hand build too hard in NBA. It's more about setting like loose parameters and like hoping for news to work out. But in NFL, I'm basically hand building, and I'm hand building for the contest that it's going to be used in.
You mentioned in the spring that you were kind of starting to wind back or wind down your DFS play. What was the reason for that? Because you also mentioned that you didn't think projections were necessarily getting sharper, and projections are your edge. So I am curious then why you would be scaling back.
Oh, well, industry projections aren't getting sharper. So that edge is going to stay there because it's just my projections. I never said that I was scaling back sort of from I guess like winding down because I think the games aren't beatable. I probably ran good, but like the last 2 years have been some of my stronger years. It was just more like a return on time type thing.
So just other opportunities in life.
Right. So not necessarily. It's just, to that end, I would probably never quit NFL because you can get down all this action. And in theory, I could do like 20, 30, 40 hours a week and get away with it. But if I do 20, 30 hours in NBA, that's like 3 days of slates and like a third of the action in NFL. So it's like, it's a return on time thing. Like if you told me I could come into this NBA season, exit with like X amount of like winnings, that number is a big factor in deciding if I want to play NBA.
What other stuff is alluring to you right now to spend your time doing if it's not DFS?
I'm into like crypto, VC, PE, a lot of like starting to get into like physical art. So just like branching out all over. And I also wouldn't mind doing like actual front office stuff.
Interesting.
I've had opportunities for front office, but it's not the good time yet. And I don't know. There's like political stuff involved where people don't want to. It's hard for like a straight gambling quant type to like get very far in those circles because they like the ex players and stuff like that.
The Haralabob cautionary tale. I assume you're kind of
sure
referencing. Yeah.
Yeah.
how much of DFS for you is like you genuinely enjoy it? You mentioned you do watch some of the games, that it is fun for you, or is this just an EV generating exercise? And once it's all gone, you'll move on to the next thing.
No, part of my edge is that I always like sports. So it's a fun exercise. I'd still be watching games if it wasn't really anything on the line. I think probably like the best players, maybe I'm not speaking for everyone, but like, I think it's a pretty good edge to be interested in what you're gambling on.
Who are the best players? Let's do it.
Who are the best players?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot.
Should we go by sport, maybe?
Who NBA? Are the ones you respect the most right now?
I've said on the other pods before who the best guys are. So.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Who's overrated? Who gets too much shine? On Twitter or podcast?
Oh, yes, you can.
Why not?
No, because then they're going to like look in the mirror.
you think they'll have a come to Jesus moment about their play if you put them on blast?
Nobody's watching.
That's I can't go there.
Smart.
So who? What are you still sitting in all of the high stakes three mans if they're filling? Is that part of your contest selection?
Yeah, they fill here and there. So I mean, there's like random players that come by in like the high stakes three man stuff that like don't even play GPPs, but it's like really dependent on the week, or I don't, there's no really rhyme or reason to those games filling, but they'll fill sometimes.
If you see you're matched with like, what user will you be like, shit, I don't like this spot, like having to go against him in a high stakes three man, who scares you in that regard?
Nobody. Like I just have different projections and I do some scouting of like who I'm playing. So that factors into like what I can use and what I like sometimes don't use. So it's like sort of understanding player tendencies, DFS player tendencies. And I'm comfortable enough taking anyone in a three man just because I know my projections are somewhat different. But I actually don't post head to heads for that reason. I think like it's better suited for like a three or four man winner take all type, because
yeah,
the edge in the head to head would be too small.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I haven't played, I rarely play cash games anymore, but I mean, we recommend on here, we tell people just don't play three mans.
You get worried about collusion elements, because that's generally the point against playing three mans.
Do I get worried about collusion?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not at this point in time, but there was a point in time where I was worried about collusion.
What changed?
They stop colluding.
Who's they?
I mean, do you remember? Like, I guess I'm in a unique position to speak on it because I've been in that lobby since day one. Do you remember the Empire tweets
before he left Twitter,
or Empire Maker on Twitter? Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember what the accusations were?
God. Yeah. What was it, Pete? I think he was just getting cheated or something. I can't remember.
It involved Mach 11, right?
I guess more specifically, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember. But
he deactivated, so they're...
Yeah.
Yeah, he deactivated, so they're not here for us to reference right now, but some of it was hyperbole, but there weren't really any lies told. All of his... Everything he said regarding collusion on three mans for true.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying it. SRN and Mach 11. Yeah.
I can speak on it better because, you know, I was in there from day one. So I was there before they were colluding, and I'm still here after they stopped colluding. Yeah, it was.
So for people who aren't familiar, what were they doing?
It's like, so I first noticed it in 2021 in like NBA, and then it carried on more aggressively into NFL Showdown, where you could understand that there is potential for duping among optimal type players. And these are some of the more nitty optimal robotic type players in the industry, right? Like, if you were to go on like main slate, for example, in the same time frame. So I'm talking about NFL season 2021 to 2022. If you were to look at main slates for that year, like Tsushima and SRN, they weren't even posting three mans on main slate, but they would play the 50-50s and double ups. So now out of the blue, they feel like they're confident enough or think they have enough edge to an NFL showdown to post like 100K at three mans, where if you're playing optimal or near optimal, the odds of duping another player who's like-minded is like upwards of 40%. It's really high. And so they would go on these three, they'll just like never dupe the whole season.
Right. And then the goal is
it's pretty egregious. Well, like it's simply like if you don't dupe you're playing near optimal, someone plays the best optimal, someone plays like the third most optimal or like 1 degree of freedom away from optimal, you're in a pretty good spot. And once in a while your third party's gonna dupe one of you, but as long as like they're not. Like that's worse for the third party because at least they have some chance of duping, whereas you know you're not going to dupe with someone in the contest.
And what did you do when you realized this was happening? Did you immediately stop playing those?
No. Like I had like a I went on like a crusade of like wanting to just beat them, but it was a big difference when like I knew for sure I was being colluded against versus like when I wasn't certain.
Did you run this up the ladder to anyone on these sites trying to flag that this was happening?
Yeah. So I tracked like a bunch of slates and I was like, it was like 30 slates and I duped probably like 8 or 9 times in the three mans against some of these guys in these 30 slates. And this is factoring in that like halfway through, I realized I was being cheated. So like, if I didn't account for that aspect, I'd probably dupe them like 15 times out of the 30. And they never duped with each other in that time frame. I guess the more egregious part of it was that like half the time they'd have the same entry in the double up 50-50s, but just different in the three mans.
Yeah, that's pretty smoking gun, right?
And so like
right.
That's just poor. I guess it's like just poor cheating technique because it's like not only do you want to collude in the three mans, you want to play optimal in the 50-50 when there's like a clear optimal lineup.
Yep.
And when you let people know that this was happening and I assume presented some of this data, what was the feedback or reception to that?
I mean, I first went about it quietly because like I said, I was trying to win. And there was no clear edge to anyone now if I knew that there was collusion. I mean, but that at that point, it's like most of the top pros who had, by the time like I was bringing it up to DK, most people had already, like, most of the pros who, like, play these games had also brought it up to DK. And I think the fact that they're, like, a huge public company, they have, like, a sharp legal team, it's going to be hard to sort of provide the onus of proof. Like, they'll throw, like, jargon at you, like, saying, like, there's a difference between implicit collusion or, like, explicit collusion, stuff like that. And they don't really understand the mathematical improbability of things. These aren't like DFS players, right? These are suits. And there's a lot of things that they don't understand. So like, and even from my perspective, I have to pick my fight because like the way to really win in this scenario is like take them to court, DK that is, if they don't do anything, right? And they were pretty set on not doing anything, so. I have a lot to lose by being on DK's bad side.
Do you think there's even a way for them to realistically enforce it under the current setup, or do they need to alter like how three man sit? I know Brian has mentioned like an RNG for, you know, people and you don't know which room you're necessarily getting placed in. Like how does this actually get solved or fixed?
Well, like it affects nobody. Like nobody's playing 10K three man. So you could count them on one hand. So it doesn't really matter, I'd say. And it shouldn't matter. Like if I was in their position, DK's position, I wouldn't care either. But yeah, the best case would just be the randomizer. Like, say you want to play a three man, and then they'll match you with people who are willing to play a three man, and you don't know who you're playing when you go into it.
Yeah,
that is my idea, but it really works much better in non three man stuff, like head to heads, 4-8 small field, because they would still never dupe, you know. So they would screw each other by not playing the, you know, whatever the optimal lineup is when they're not in the same one. So it works a little bit better in three man. They should still do it, but it actually works great in cash games. I think they should do it in cash games too. And I think casuals would be less afraid to enter cash games, because they just, right now they go and they see, oh, Utica cows and everything. Great. Now I'm not going to play this 10 man, you know, $10, 50-50. So I think it would help all around, but I mean, I think I wrote about that like in a post somewhere like 7 years ago. So that's probably not happening.
It was just so funny that they would use the different ones in like the 50-50. Because like I'll put on like my OJ Simpson hat on right now and say that if I was going to collude in those, I would just use different ones off the jump. And then at least it's defensible that, like, oh, I just had a different optimal the whole time.
Right. It's a very brazen way to
cheat. Yeah, that's so clear.
So, like, actually, like, if you recall, like, there was, like, I think Empire, he tweeted out something around initially. This is probably, like, in 2021. So this is, like, peak of when all this stuff was going on. Because he was affected by it, too. And, like, it's pretty funny. You could like draw a line in the timeline of events where after he tweeted that, they never duped in double ups again. They just ran, they wouldn't dupe in three mans, obviously, but they just ran one lineup each time. Like they should have been the whole time if you're like cheating smartly. But like literally right after that, there was like 10 more slates. And prior to that, they would be running like different lineups in the 50-50s versus three mans like half the time. But in the last 10 slates after that initial tweet storm, never happened again. So from my perspective, basically Empire like publicly shamed them into stopping the operation, because by the time the next season rolled around, they weren't even doing three-mans anymore.
Just so people have a frame of reference for how profitable this kind of cheating would be, can you give like what your expected ROI would be in a high-stakes three-man, and then like what kind of ROI you could potentially earn from doing that?
I mean, in a fair game, it would be like single digit ROIs, but it's really hard to, I couldn't say for sure.
But you think they're double digit ROI with the collusion?
Only if the other party didn't know about it. Yeah. So I do feel bad for anyone who like was affected by it. Again, it's not many people, but anyone who was affected by it and they didn't know at the time that this was going on.
Yeah. EM2 probably got hit pretty hard.
All right, Nerdy Kenner's on the case. He's gonna sim it out.
he actually can. How about the other big cheating accusation? I have my own thoughts on, and why are the name? Oh yeah, Saramek, the English dude who plays golf and soccer.
I don't know, so I don't want to speak on it because I wasn't in any games with him.
Okay, the same accusations over there and those sports, and I don't know, I heard that guy on a few podcasts, and he doesn't seem like a cheater to me. But I don't have any evidence at all. I mean, seriously, Pete. Sometimes
Ryan's been grinding these body language expert podcasts, and now he thinks he can tell he's a cheater.
Yeah, I still have that liars. Some of the old Poker Tells book. Mike Cairo, just bust that out. Yeah, no, but seriously, he just seems like a nice guy to me. I don't know, but
I think I've heard the same ones, but maybe it could be being fooled by an English accent.
That's true. It's possible.
You know, we did get a couple questions in the Lulz Discord I wanted to pass on. Someone wanted to peek behind the curtain on how you register for every contest in the lobby. I think people are impressed and know the amount of time that even takes. Like, is it just pure grunt work when you're doing that?
Yeah, there's nothing to that. It's just clicking.
How long does it take you to like register for every single contest on a big slate?
Not long nowadays.
It's not awful. Like max 30 minutes for NFL.
Okay.
But it does. Okay. It's going to take you 15 minutes at least.
Yeah.
It's because there's a max. There's a, they have a max in like how many entries you could do. What is it? 300. 300 each time. So he's got to like do the 300, then 300, then 300.
Yeah.
And you're doing that across how many sites are you playing on these days for, say, for
just
NFL?
Just the two. FanDuel.
Good.
Yeah. DK.
Stay away from Yahoo. Not welcome.
I did that best ball because I know Pete does the best ball stuff. I did the best ball like live draft though.
Were you there?
I heard you. I heard you tapped Chess Liam as your coach.
Yeah, I never did it before, so I wanted some input.
Yeah, how was that experience? Because that was like a whole thing, a live draft. You guys had the podiums out there. How did that go?
It was pretty quiet. Honestly, there wasn't like too much banter going on. So like if they made an event out of it, it wouldn't even be that good.
Yeah.
It was like people like were pretty locked in.
What made you want to do it? It sounds like this was kind of a one-off best ball experience for you. Was it just being able to get a big amount of action down on a single draft?
Partially, but I won the entry in a qualifier. So.
Oh, okay.
I can tell you, Pete, it's called TMM syndrome. Too much.
But it's actually zero rake. That was no rake.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They should do more of that. I think that would actually be a nice boon to DFS is some rake reform.
Yeah, considering they were doing no rake, they should have marketed it more as like something for the people.
What was your experience with Liam? He famously was my chess coach. I taught him how to play best ball. It's been working out for both of us. Did you have a good experience with Liam?
Yeah, he's a nice guy. He's a very wholesome dude.
There you go.
I hope he does well in the streaming streets with the best ball content.
Yeah, no, he's great. He's out there grinding.
I'm curious if you're watching Liam, do you watch our show? Or no,
I don't watch his stuff, but I know what he's up to because like. Oh, you guys. I've seen a handful.
Okay. That's
Are you as done with all the Sims talk as everyone else? People, we did like five straight episodes and we're starting to get pushback.
Yeah, I mean, there's still only so much you can say.
Yeah.
Are you guys still going to keep going down that path?
No.
we're trying to get out of the Sims.
Oh. We wanted to stop like a month ago.
Yeah. But the thing is, we got to get you coming on here talking about DFS collusion. We need another DFS site to implode or have some internal drama. People got to give us fodder to give out there. Otherwise, we just fall back to Sims talk.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the nature of dealing in like a super niche industry.
Super niche? No, we got 333 people watching you right now, Yuta. I mean, this is a decent.
Is that considered high for you guys?
I don't know. It's probably about average for our shows. No, it's higher than a normal. You're pulling in views, Yuta.
You know how much money this is going to make this show. How about this? How about speaking of money, some fun stuff people, I'm sure people want. Like, what's your biggest downswing? You know, whatever period you want, however long you want to do some number that would break someone's brain.
It's like billions, like. 2-3 million.
You lost 2-3 billion.
No, million.
Okay, I heard billion. 2-3 million. That's actually not that bad. I would have guessed more.
It's not that bad.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, if you're gonna go through the downswing, you want it to be fast, though. You want to go straight down. You don't want to like grind out small losses for months.
My guess is people listening to you will just say, you know, this guy's a robot. He probably doesn't process emotions. Like, do those downswings, do they hit you? Do they ever alter your play? Are you susceptible to human emotions, Yuta?
Well, actually, I normally go at like 80% effort. So when I start losing, I'll like dial it in a little closer. That's about it, though. Like, I've been through a lot of the swings. So
what does that other 20% represent when you're cruise control versus dialed in?
It's kind of like empty head setting the stuff when I could be engaged. Just like I've had a lot of reps, like I've done the 10,000 hours here, so I could get by on like non-max effort.
Mm-hmm.
Partially is like, yeah, there's like some stress factors at play, but like it's really out of your control. I'll like diagnose what I'm doing, if I did anything wrong, if I had bad luck, that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. What were the other questions, Pete, we had from Discord? Anything else in there?
Let's see. Oh, well, we asked you a little bit about what kind of stuff you might be looking to do outside of DFS. Someone wanted me, I think it was on your pod with Levitan, you said you only play alphas. Someone wanted a little bit more on your lineup construction process. They weren't buying that you just play the best plays.
What was the context like?
Given
a non-alpha and an alpha, yeah, I'll take the alpha.
Yeah.
And this I like playing guys who are good in real life, not just good in fantasy, I guess.
Gotcha. Can you give an example of maybe
good example. Puka Nacua has more points than Ayuk.
Gotcha.
But Ayuk is a borderline top 10 receiver. And Puka is like maybe 20.
Gotcha.
So is this like an art form, just determining who's alpha and who's not?
I mean, there's like, okay, so when games are tight or like there's high leverage games, there's certain players that are undeniable where they'll beat the matchup regardless of what the matchup is versus players who can be schemed out. And this is even more applicable in like NBA.
Mm.
And it generally relates to like how alpha you are, like your build. Like you're not going to be able to guard size and speed, but you can guard scheme and, you know, coaching with just like smart defense.
Well, that's actually funny because a huge talking point this past week was Devon Achan's ownership in contests. Bryant actually surprisingly near the top of the DFS pros there. But how do you think about stuff like that, right? Where it's this hot topic, is he a good play? Is he a bad play? Do you take big stances, portfolio stances on a single player, like say on an NFL main slate, or are you pretty smoothed out?
I'm fairly smoothed out, but it just depends on the context of the lineup. I'm sure there's like a lot of lines where he was a good play and lineups where he's a bad play. It just depends on like how you're using it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what I was getting at, where when you were, you know, exporting files from your optimizer or what you're doing, you know, what do you like? Do you consider combos a lot when you're getting those lineups, when you're hand building and stuff like that?
Yeah, I'm considering the combos all the time. But it's really field based. Like I sort of know what a good lineup looks like. So I just try to aspire to keep doing that. I know it's not very helpful to like go into it, but there's rarely like a truly bad play, because if it's a shitty play, you can just say it's contrarian.
Well, that's what I generally try.
Everyone knows that trick.
Yeah, that's an easy trick. Now you just say my sim told me it was a good lineup. That's the new trick. You know?
Blame the Sims. That's so right. So you are the alpha brain player then. I mean, you're not doing any portfolio theory stuff or anything like that. You're kind of, you know what looks good. You're making your own projections. You're seeing what's going around in the industry, whatever else you're putting in these hours, and clicking, making the lineups yourself, essentially, or putting in so many rules to the optimizer, they'll kind of spit out them the way you would do it anyways.
Yeah, that's sort of like the goal, but that is a really intensive process where like I can just click it and the result would be something maybe similar to the sim would do, but the inputs are so unique and coming from a different starting point that even if the endpoints are kind of similar, I'm still being different.
Have you tested your projections against reality, like stored that database and then made sure you're accurate?
No, but like, I'm not really concerned about it.
Well, once you have all the money,
I'll look at all the players that are like pretty good players and see what they're doing. And that's like a decent barometer. But yeah, sometimes I'm like fairly judgmental of what I see there as well. So that actually makes me feel better about my own play style.
There's lots of people in the chat today commenting about how they've given you lots of money over the years in DFS contests. Can you give these people, the hand builders of the world out there, a tip? What's one way they can improve their DFS play, get a little bit of that money back from Yuta over the coming weeks?
there's no one trick to solve it. I think structure your stuff to the contest size and the payouts more. I guess that's probably not thought about as hard as it should be.
So let's say we have a 500 man, you know, 100K to first, $800. How am I structuring that different than the, you know, 100,000 man, $5 entry?
Oh, well, 500 man, 100K to first is rather top heavy.
Yeah.
So it's not that far off from reality. Yeah. It's just, that would just be correlate heavy and find some type of lower ownership in there. It doesn't really need to be across the lineup, just like at a spot or two. But then in the jackpot thing, you just have to go like really low ownership. You don't have to correlate as hard because you have to independently hit the nuts in like four spots versus two.
Mm-hmm. You said four, I assume you're using the optimizer for your 150 sets, but you did mention hand building. Are you hand building some of the single entry and the smaller field stuff?
Yeah, I hand build all those. Yeah.
Okay.
I hand build all the small field stuff.
What about like the wild
high stakes stuff? I'm still hand building. It's just like more of a approved the lineup, but there's still plenty of manual edits going on there.
Oh, okay.
But if it's a higher stakes thing, I just might make a whole different set.
Are you using that little swap out feature? I don't know if you use Fantasy Cruncher, yeah. But that little swap out feature, you know, you build some lineups and then I want to swap this guy and this guy.
I do. Yeah. Like I would do that if, say, my one quarterback has like too much of a certain guy. Like sometimes the projection just works out too well. That's actually a sign that that play might get overused when like the convenience of the stack from a price sensitivity standpoint. If like it's uncomfortable to like fit in a certain play over a different receiver, you might get like 80% on one receiver and 20% on an equal receiver just from a price sensitivities. And they'll end up being like 30% versus 8%.
Mm.
So like that's sort of like a portfolio diversification more than like if you're bullish on the quarterback, it could happen in a variety of ways, but pricing drives it towards one. And I think the Sims have that flaw too.
Pete, you were going to highlight something, but I do have a question.
Yeah, do it.
We've talked about a decent amount lately on like the future of DFS. What will it look like in 5 years, 10 years? Thinking back to, let's say, 2016, would you say the games have gotten considerably harder, about the same for the average Joe, you know, not the Uticas of the world? Having that in mind, what does it look like 5 years from now?
Yeah, I don't think it's gotten considerably harder. It's just been, it's more analytically inclined now. So we've, in that time, the industry has been able to quantify concepts of like stacking and like gotten like marginally better at projecting. So yeah, it's gotten harder. But you have to approach it with the understanding that the field is behaving somewhat differently. So you pull a different lever to create something that's plus EV. I mean, for a new player coming in, it's never been tougher for sure. As far as the future, it's not really going to change to a large extent. It's a pretty mature field in like industry at this point.
Do you think competition matters at all? FanDuel goes away, Yahoo goes away.
Yeah, I mean that's all at the margins. Like you'll get raked more in that scenario. So it all matters. Like it's not gonna get better, I guess. But it's not gonna get terribly worse, is my view on it.
There was a question earlier that reminds me to pull up. Someone wanted you to expand on how you know if your process is bad or if a way to actually evaluate your play. That's something we talk about. Here it is from Javier. Can you ask him if you are playing bad or if you are just running bad? Like what kind of things can you do to actually evaluate?
I'm not in a position to answer that.
because you've never ran bad?
I don't know. I've run bad.
You've never played bad is what you're saying?
Yeah. it's hard. If it from that scenario, it's very difficult. Just really just study the good players in that at that point. And if you're creating some type of semblance of what they're putting out, you're probably fine.
You say study the good players. Give it, if someone wanted to make a basket of usernames to review to improve their play, give me four names of lineups that people could look at after contests.
Yeah, I don't want to say that's
can you give us one? Do people need one user to go off and see what they're doing?
Yeah, we'll go pod favorite Ricky D.
Okay.
Wow.
Ricky D and Showdown.
What do you respect about Ricky D's play?
Well, it's clear he optimizes in Sims well. I'll say Ricky D and Showdown.
Okay.
So just play a bunch of defenses and kickers. No.
Nobody said that's a bad strategy.
No, I know. I look at Ricky's lineups too. How about like one thing you've learned where you were watching, maybe an epiphany, generally speaking, or you were reviewing someone's lineup and like, why didn't I think of that? I'm going to do that now.
I don't really have that, but I mean, I've adjusted my own stuff, like accounting for swaps better over time, but these are all just things that are more like at the margins. But like maybe people don't build for swap enough or like don't swap enough, but we all know that, right? Like it's a lot to get to. That's what I think I'm more scared of about in the future. If someone makes the opto swap optimizer.
Yeah, that's coming. That's coming. Do you swap a lot in NFL?
Like it's really hard to get to. So, I do it for like my high stakes stuff. And if I have a good sweat going, I'll swap, but it's hard to wholesale swap.
Yeah, very hard. But I mean, so like you, if there's no injury news, you'll still get on your computer at whatever 1-2 o'clock and then go, okay, let's look through these high stakes snaps and swap around.
Well, this is more something you're doing at 3:40, but yeah.
Well, whatever, you know what I mean? I don't know. You put in 40 hours, Chess, okay, puts in 80 hours. I don't know what time you start that swap process. But yeah, so like
you need the 3:40 information to be able to do it right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's 2 o'clock here, right? Yeah. 2 o'clock usually the news comes out in central time, I think. But
that's just news cycle stuff. It's not results stuff.
Well, what I was saying also too is like regardless of news, so there's not a Cam Akers gets ruled out thing. It's I'm trying to ask like you'll look in a high stakes, compare what the guys have up top, and then change based on what you think they will have. Do you do that?
You're just cognizant of what you might have to swap into at that point, but you don't have enough information to do a swap. If that makes sense.
Sure.
Yuta, before we let you go, was there any questions I should have asked? Anything you want to get off your chest with this platform here? Because, you know, Adam had the condoms on, wasn't letting you fire off all those hot takes that I know are deep within you. Now's the time, man.
I got them out. You guys did good.
Brian, do you have any final comments here before we get out of here?
Yeah, we got some. Like, I mean, we got to ask him, you know, what team he's on. Are there any fighting opportunities in the DF West? Do you want to fight Mach Levin? Do you want to challenge him here?
Would you in any kind of mixed martial arts be interested in going after Mach Levin in the ring?
I don't think he's like he can't really do anything front facing in the DFS space. So, but no, you should ask Empire when he comes back.
Yeah,
he'll be back.
We're overdue to get Empire Maker on here. But yes, and as the question we do end all of our shows with, are you on team Run Pure Sports or Ship It Nation?
I didn't know it was like an ongoing thing. Like,
oh yeah, it's big.
Didn't Run Pure like just hire everyone?
It sounds like you might be more front running with Run Pure. No love for the little guys over there.
I just can't speak on
it. Scoop and Tambo.
I know you guys had a whole pot on. I don't know.
Hey, well, okay. How about this? If you kind of, you know, in the next week or so, kind of have an epiphany, like, no, I am on Team Ship It Nation, just DM it to Brian or I, and then we'll put a public service announcement out there. We'll get a graphic made. Utical shockingly pivots from Team Run Pure Sports to Ship It Nation.
You know, I got another thing too. Is your Twitter Utical? Because I thought we follow each other, but I don't think we do. Do you have a Twitter?
Yeah, that's me. I just use it to DM though at this point.
Oh, okay. So that's
I haven't tweeted.
Got it. Okay. I'm going to follow you here in a second. Yeah, it's like exactly like your name too, right?
Yeah,
I got you. You're verified too.
Got to get that to DM.
There you go. Yuta, I'll drop your Twitter down here. Anything else you'd like to plug? For people to check out while you're here?
No, you guys are good.
Any content site opportunities for you coming up?
I effectively plugged ETR in the last stuff. So go get ETR.
Hang on. All right. Jennings is screaming at
me. He's got a question. He wants to know go ahead, Pete.
Yeah. Please ask Yuta what his information diet looks like, both for DFS and life in general. What content are you consuming, Yuta?
I think pretty independently. So it's not as if I'm relying on any content. I have certain Twitter lists, and then for sports, it's the same as all of you guys.
How about life? Do you follow any you know, Naval, whatever?
Are you doing cold plunges out there? What are we doing?
You? Are you deep into libertarian theory?
Are you eating liver?
I do. I do. Like, I'll do some reading on the side, and that's more like unplugging. People are over consuming. So,
okay.
You think
it's a hazard? They might be.
Unless you listen to lulls, you can always binge these podcasts to your heart desire.
Yeah, I'm going to go back and watch the last 20.
There you go. I'll even let you watch them at 2x speed, Yuta. I know you got a lot going on. Brian, any final words here?
Nah. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Good luck. Not that you need it, but you know, stop taking everyone's money. Don't be so greedy. Leave a little for the rest of us.
Just a little. No, yeah. Genuinely appreciate you swinging by. Brian, I already noticed in our mentions, Whistles wants to come back on the show. Oh, did you see that?
I didn't. All right.
There you go. Gets the little head nod from you to there. So we'll see what we can do there. Otherwise, appreciate you guys.
Wait. Do you have a take on Whistles? Come on. Is he a Fed? Do you think he's a Fed?
Good. He's a good player.
Good player.
But Fed, also possibly.
What's up? Both teams played hard. he's a sharp player.
All right. Okay. It sounds like Yuta is confirming that Whistles is also a Fed. So we appreciate that. We'll get the audio up for this podcast. We're here every Thursday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern. Brian, parting shots. We out of here?
No. Don't be a Fed. Don't be a Fed. Don't be a snitch.
Thanks to Yuta. We'll see you guys next time.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.